Good afternoon to everyone, and good afternoon to those who are tuned in, and good afternoon to those of you that are next door. We've got a few empty seats. If you want to migrate, you're welcome to, but we're glad you're with us. This is a third sermon in a three-part series about marriage and family. In the first sermon, I went through marriage, and we had biblical verses after biblical verses that told us what the guidelines and instructions from God are about marriage. I then gave a sermon on commitment. It's kind of it is a bridge between the marriage and the children, and that then being the family. The best gift that you could give your children is your commitment to your spouse and working together in everything you do. So I had that as a bridge topic. Commitment is very important too when we think about the commitment in marriage as well as the commitment we have towards rearing children and training them. So today we come to the final part, the family part of this marriage and family series. When I was in Ambassador College, we had a class for the fourth year in the last year, senior year. It was called Family Relations. And at that point, then they told us about the birds and the bees, how to have a successful marriage, and how to find ourselves rearing our children happily. Well, at that point, most of us, about 21, we knew pretty much the first part, and that's the only thing we wanted to talk about anyhow. So we had the services of Dr. Meredith and a few other instructors that would tell us about those things. When you go to the Bible, the original idea of family, husband and wife and children, was to be a peaceful and unified activity. We are seeing, if we let our imagination roll just a little bit, families where everyone was happy, at peace, and unified, where there was the ability to show genuine love to each other. And while that was the potential in Eden, Adam and Eve were thrust out of Eden, and so what was possible became then your own devising on the other side, outside. And we now see in the biblical record murder, and with murder we see some very nasty things, vanity, jealousy, greed that take place. Now today we don't have the boundaries of Eden in our lives, and certainly not in our nation. And so the garden in which we raise our families, and the way that we work with our children and with each other, are up to sometimes our own devices. We decide what we want to do. We establish an atmosphere and experiences for our youth. We make a decision about what we are going to do. Most of us have found that that has taken place in our lives. Now, Proverbs 22, verse 6, is a simple verse that I want to take a little time studying with you. Proverbs 22, 6, and you probably know it by heart. Train up or raise up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, we think that we have understood that, and yet many people that have been raised that way, with that philosophy, or at least they thought they were, have found other things to do with life and have moved into other areas. Excuse me. Of their relationships in families. How do we get to this fulfillment in Proverbs 22:6. See, families have migrated quite a bit. The families that you remember from your youth, or that you might see in the old black and white movies, is not quite how it is today. We might say marriages have morphed. Well, in fact, many marriages and many families have deteriorated. And that is something that is surrounding us. We need to be aware that families are deteriorating and that we are not allowing that in our own homes. Now, this is maybe a sermon that you would discount because, after all, your children are for the most part, old and grown. And there might be grandchildren as well. Well, you can still use these keys in working with your families. And so, while you might discount the sermon, please take some small little notes if you're the note taker, because I think I'll have a surprise for you at the end. I know I will. There are many institutions that try to explain about family activity and how a family should be run. There's classes about it in universities and in the church from time to time we talk about this topic. It is important that the family be geared towards success. But we are posed then with a question: will youth, will families, will parents follow the instruction and guidance of the instructors and of the ministers, the servants of God? That's the question. That's the $1,000 question. Once you find out what to do, will you do it? We do have a lot of people in the public sector who look after children, guardians of them, and the courts are set up to take care of them. These public guardians of law and justice really can't cope with the backlog. And we see this taking place today, even in our news, with what is happening on our southern border around Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. What is a family today? Today, many people live together without the benefit of legal union. They will not and cannot, dare not make that commitment, which was the topic I discussed last time. And we need to be very sure in our minds that we can make that commitment and understand the commitment is for the rest of our life. Your children don't all of a sudden become not your children. Now, you can abdicate from taking care of them, but they're still your children. And you'll be judged by how you have done that. We have people today calling themselves family who have a same-sex relationship. No production can take place. There is not the reproducing of the family. There can be the adoption, but it is not raising, growing a family. And then we have many marriages, and probably some of the ones in this room, that were performed by the JP, the Justice of the Peace. And when you start checking, they have anything but peace. So I ask specifically today, are you willing to do what it takes to perfect your family? As far as commitment goes, do you have that kind of commitment? Well, let's take this verse apart just a little bit in Proverbs 22:6. It says, train up. Now, we need to look at that very squarely. It isn't, if you kind of would like to. It's an instruction. It's a, you must. train up a child. You can have varying definitions of what that means that I'm going to go through with you. But these definitions might be better understood as illustrations, and they help us to understand what it means to train up or raise up. A first illustration I would give to you is that when you're training up young people in the Jewish community, you teach them a law or a concept or the principle that you want them to follow. And after you've done that, you give them some dessert, some sweet thing to have, to eat, so that they can associate things that are good for you with what they have just, or good for your taste, with what they have just tasted with their mind. Train up a child can also come into the definition in a broader sense of a different term. Build an altar. Training up is like building an altar. Now, altars were around in the New Testament times when we read about Christ and he talks about going into the temple and so forth. But altars were very much on the scene way back in Genesis. Altars are part of the institution of mankind. Well, children are an altar for God. There's something that are dedicated to Him. The temple was the highest and holiest place. And using Samuel as an example, and you think back through that, Hannah let Samuel be indeed given to God. She worked with him as a young boy up to about 2, and then turned him over to the priest. So early in Genesis, we do have altars mentioned. In that relationship, the offering family or person was in an immediate relationship with the Eternal. You gave your child to the Eternal. Now, when you have your children and you've brought them forward, even your grandchildren, do you see that you are raising them for God? They are to be presented to the altar of God, not for sacrifice. You're the one sacrificing, but for His use, glory, and honor. Now, another similar way to look at the subject, train up, very similar to the altar, is the term to dedicate. Like Samuel, he was given away. He was dedicated to the service of God. Now, recently we've had an announcer on the radio hitting the news a lot. He's now passed away. Casey Kasem. And some of you are just young enough to remember him. And when he would find these phone calls coming in or whatever, he would say, and this one is dedicated to, and he'd give that title of a song, and it was dedicated to that person. And these are things that we may remember. He was giving away a song. When we dedicate, we give away something that is close to our heart. We give away purity and perfection to our mate. We call that a wedding. Purity and perfection is given on that wedding time. That's what a wedding is all about. And this illustrates why young men and young women should remain chaste and wholesome, because they are giving themselves away in a pure sense to their mate. You give away yourself to only one for all of life. And so it is also when you are giving away and dedicating your children, you dedicate them for their entire life. So all that you do with them and instructing them all of their life is something that they can use from you as you, let's say, tutor them along the way. Now, the part of the verse that I want to look at next says, train up a child. Train up a child. It illustrates you have to start young. What are you training up? That question can be answered with different conclusions. Sometimes we are not training up children. We're training up other things. It's probably easier for some people to train up zucchini and corn than children. Maybe the real question to ask is, why are you raising up a child? That's because they were just on the scene, or was it a desire and it was a plan? Well, for most of us, we know that somewhere in between there is where kids come from. Somewhere in between of desire and a plan, all of a sudden there are children. Now, the word translated child here is nar. It means a boy of any age, from infancy to adolescence, and that includes girls. It can mean a babe, a boy, a girl, a child, a damsel, a lad, a young man, a young woman. So it includes all of these stations in life as a child grows. He starts at infancy and becomes then a young man or woman. So we are to train up a child, starting when they're young and going forward. Now, some of us have only started midway through the process, and we're often bamboozled a bit because it's always a slurry of ideas that we're trying to form into one, and you've got someone that already has a taste of the other side. So when you start when they're brand new, it's a much easier. Next thing it says in the verse, train up a child in the way he should go. In the way. It doesn't say a way. There is the way. It's very specific. It's pointed. It's direct. The way. The way requires parents to know which is then the right way. And that's not a task, then, just for letting happen by circumstance. The way requires that you spend time figuring out what you want to do in training up this child. That is the way that God would be glad to author and then accept the dedication of your child to Him, because you are training him in the way. Well, we do sometimes find, indeed, mixed messages being given when we start our training in the way. Many people get detoured and just think of a way. My child is my friend is an example. Well, you can't train your friend like you want to train your child. A child should be much more than a friend. But in our society, that phrase is used many, many times. You should realize your child is your friend. No, he's much more than that. Children are worth more than friendship. We might also say they need to learn from their mistakes. We'll just let them figure out what they should or should not do. In our neighborhood, there have been a couple of times boys have knocked at our door wanting us to call 911 because of the fight that has just been happening, and they're all beaten up and they're crying and hurting. And I have done that, but I also ask the question, why don't you go home and have your mother call 911? Well, my mom says I should learn to take care of myself. If I'm going to get in a fight, I've got to win the fight. Something's missing there. Some say, I can't discipline my child. And that might be But it also might be you won't discipline your child. You won't take the imagination to find out some way to teach them. Sometimes in our society, again, disciplining is looked at as something that's painful or going to be hurting. Discipline has to be understood as a wide, wide path. You teach someone the discipline of tying their shoes. That's a discipline. Combing your hair. Making your bed. These are disciplines. And they're not a matter of always in inflicting pain. You might think you can't discipline your child. That's because you can't bring yourself to inflict pain. But you don't understand that discipline is many things. And you're eroding your opportunity if you don't do many other things with that child. Another excuse I find, some people say, well, my child is naturally contrary. He's just like I was when I was that age. What's wrong with that statement? You don't want to raise your child like you were if you've got mistakes in your background. And you might exaggerate a little bit and say, well, he's French. He's German. That's just part of the German coming out in him. Italian? I wouldn't think any Italian would say that. But we say, well, he's just a Brit at heart, and he's just going to be stiff-necked about everything. Wait a minute. We might get something as far as personality from our family. And there might be some genesis to how our family works. But really what we're talking about is human nature. And so we have to really be honest with ourselves and say, no, it isn't because it's in his blood and he got that from me. It is in his blood, but he isn't getting it from you. It's something from the absence of instruction. Well, the verse concludes and says, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. There's important things to remember there. You have to realize you're letting your child eventually depart. And when that happens, they're a little frustrated trying to figure out what are they going to do. How far out can I test my boundaries? And how far away from my folks' boundaries can I get? Now, that only happens to some other buddy's kid, right? It's never happened to any of you. I think it's happened to every one of you. I know I tested my boundaries. I knew what they were, but I wanted to go over there a little bit, see how far I could get out there before I got burnt. We all go through that maturing to find out where we can stand and what is right. And sometimes burning takes place. We just hope it isn't permanent. So when your child leaves home, what impression does he leave with? There are negatives and there are positives. And so you have to be mature yourself in understanding that and helping define that as they grow older. Now, Joy and I have three great kids. We always wondered how they would come out and do and we've been fortunate. But we worked at it quite a bit, too. I better said, my wife, Joy, really worked at it. So it's important that we understand that. If you want your child to be the model of biblical teachings, then you have to mold them that way. You can't let it happen on its own. You can find it molding itself then. It'll have its own image, not the image that you think God can get along with as you dedicate your child to God. In the class that we took, we had some instruction on 4 C's of child rearing. I've been thinking it through and doing a little wandering around the internet. I found some examples of that I want to just briefly bring to your attention so that you see there are many groups that have an idea about the four C's, but they're different than you probably would think of. The Mormon four C's, they have four C's: chastity, conjugality, children, and chauvinism. That's how they work it through. You start with chastity, then you have copulation, then you have children, and then you have bravado, chauvinism. That's how they run their four C's. Focus on the family's four C's are commander, coach, counselor, consultant. And so that is kind of, well, not kind of, a very direct way of maturing through stages with your child to adulthood. You start with a commander of his life, then a coach, then a counselor, and finally a consultant. And so, on some occasions, our older children will consult with us. And I think some of you might know of that in your own lives. Now, if you're a resident of DeKalb, Illinois, I found that there are individual parenting classes available in the community for the county, part of a county extension program. So if you want to move to DeKalb County, there are these things that you can take advantage of. They have individual parenting classes that are flexible and offer flexible scheduling. So you don't have to worry about when you can or can't make it, and it's not real structured, but they are there. It helps. They're trying to enhance your parenting skills. Another thing about it is that any parent or guardian unable to attend group parenting classes or wanting to discuss specific issues can receive individual sessions. So there you can wander into the office. Another concept, the third, a parenting consultant is available to meet in the family's home at the 4C office or at any other location of convenience. Four, class topics for parenting include building self-esteem, guidance, child development, family relationships, communication, and anger management. Now, can you imagine having so little control of your life, but you've got a child and you're needing instruction in some of these areas? You really haven't matured a lot if you've got some issues there. Fifth, it says families can create an individual plan for family success that can be adjusted as needed or as interests change. So you can kind of meander around and say, well, I want to try this for a while. I want to have a same-sex relationship. Then maybe I'll get married over here, and maybe then I'll get divorced. Then we'll just have get along well kind of a relationship with somebody else. As you meander around, you can do what you want to do. And you can then adjust it, as it says. So they don't have much structure. And I wonder what the conclusion of it is. What's the success level of those children? Well, you can call their family enrichment program and discuss the individual parenting classes. And I have two phone numbers, one 800 number if you're interested. Well, I have my own four C's. I started with eight, and I wound down to six, but six C's sounds like a bad report card. So I've got four C's. These four C's, you just take a brief note, and this will help you to see a foundation for how to raise a successful family. The first C is consistency. Consistency. Be consistent with what you say and do. Follow through with the consequences of rules and promises of reward. If there's consequences or rewards, always follow through. If consistency is lacking, the rest of parenting tends to fall apart. And so I put it first because it is the most important part in this sense of four C's that you need to do. For two-parent families, and that includes most of us, it is important both parents show consistency between one another. Now, there are very few children, but there are one or two that are very good at manipulating their parents when they are not working together. Now, there's only one or two kids that have figured out how to play their parents against each other, right? It's the majority. If a kid doesn't know that by the time they're three, I don't know. Your child can play you, whether it's with a two-parent family or a one-parent family. Somehow they get that instruction by amniocentesis, I guess. It just happens. Set and know your family's rules or boundaries and communicate them at the time when all is calm. And you set some boundaries, and sometimes you want them to have wider boundaries, other times not. If the boundaries are broken, restate the boundary area and what the consequences will be if it happens again. If you don't make your bed again, this is what's going to happen. If it does happen again, apply the consequences. Be consistent. If they do it right, be consistent. Do it calmly whilst connecting with them and restating clearly and concisely why the consequences are being applied. Now, most of us have come in from a situation where mom is the first one to find out what has happened with the child, whether it's in the school system or it's happened in the backyard or down the block. And so then we say, wait till your father comes home. Now, if you say that, you have to know that when the father comes home, that you're both on the same wavelength. Wonders of wonders, there's a telephone. If you've forgotten about it, you can prepare ahead of time. Call them and say, hey, they chopped down the cherry tree. What are we going to do? In Matthew 6:24 is a verse you know well. Let me just read it for you. It contains a proverb that serves well in regard to consistency. Matthew 6:24. No man can serve two masters. He will either hate the one and love the other, or else you hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And you can't expect your child then to just be serving you, but not your mate. There has to be consistency that you're on the same path. You're expecting the same behavior. You're expecting to reward the same behavior in the same way. Now, we grandparents, we tend to spoil the kids. That's part of grandparenting. I've found that out. When I see those grandchildren and they're up early, my way of getting up early is kind of counter the rest of the family. But I'll get up early. I say, come on, put on your shoes and some clothes. We're going out to IHOP. And I take them out there and I let them get their chocolate chip pancakes with chocolate syrup and chocolate milk. And then I take them home. I'm consistent. They know that when they come, looking around in the morning, where's Grandpa? And my daughters are the same way. Every time I'm with my daughters, I take them to lunch. My wife is a beautiful lady. I love her, but it's just Dad and the daughters. It's just Dad and the daughters. So be consistent. If you do start some kind of a program with your children, be consistent. If you're going to sign them up for some activity on the ball field or in the basketball or whatever it is, be consistent. Really consider what you're saying that you're going to do. If you're going to take them to the gym every Sunday morning, be consistent. If you're going to take them swimming after school or after whatever, 3 days a week, then do it. Be consistent. If they can depend on you, wonder of wonders, you can depend on them. They know that there's a plan. This is how we do things. So don't let there be two masters. And be careful not to play favorites. It's not in the plan of life. We all know the story of Cinderella. The favorite, and it's a terrible story of what went through there, the hurt. So the first C is consistency. The second C is calm. Calm. Radio station out west called Calm, K-A-L-M, and they play elevator music. Parenting should be done in a calm manner. Don't use harsh or volatile conduct. Calm is more productive, more effective. Yeah, yelling and screaming may get the child's attention, but without the foundation of a loving relationship, parents will become nothing more than prison wardens enforcing the rules. So if you respond with high spirit, it's not going to establish anything but high spirit and response. And to be calm, you need to take some regular time for yourself. Some time for you to read, to time to walk, whatever it is. If you're not looking after yourself physically, spiritually, emotionally, and mentally, it's going to be very hard or harder for you to be calm. You have to look after yourself to be calm if you want to have a rapport that is calm. Now, sometimes that's easier said than done, but it is our responsibility to top up our reserves when and wherever we can. You've got to find out what you need to do to have topped up reserves. In Proverbs 15, verses 16 through 18, it talks about calm. Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure in trouble therewith. You don't need a whole lot. What you need is calm. And sometimes it's having just a gentle spirit. 17. Better is a dinner of herbs with where love is than a stalled ox in hatred therewith. It's better to eat a plate of vegetables than a great steak and have your company in the time of eating the steak be a rash thing with hatred. 18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeases strife. So keep your message calm, clear, concise. Explanations are important in giving children a context for something or engaging their cooperation. As a child grows up, they get to the stage where they see you kiss your wife. And they want to imitate that, so you teach them to kiss grandma. Now, there comes a time when they stop kissing all the women in town, right? About 12, we say, well, now we turn that off, and we just give these side hugs. Now, we need to practice side hugs more in our congregation. You know, this full embrace, doesn't always set right with the women. And the side hug is much more agreeable to many of them. They've commented to me about that. So you might think of side hugs, or with the problems we're having with disease, maybe the knuckle bump or tagging elbows, I don't know. Don't bump heads. Maybe it's just the Paul Harvey thing. It's high. It's high. That's all you need to do. Sometimes you're faced with challenging situations. He's been kissing on the girl down the street. She's 17 and a half. And you see them really going after it sometime when you come home from the grocery store. Well, that's a challenging situation. But keep calm when you approach the instruction on that kind of a topic. When we find something that gets a little filled with a little rage in us, it's real easy to get lost in dealing with the behavior or the response that we might be receiving. We lose sight of the original message. Stay on track. I found an illustration about consistency and calm working together in this illustration from Dr. Dobson. He summarizes it this way. At a football game, when a guy jumps off sides, what does the referee do? Well, he doesn't get red-faced and begin screaming about the virtues of keeping the rule. No, he drops the flag and steps off the penalty. In the same way, when your child messes up, don't break the peace of your home. You step off the penalty, and you do it consistently. Stay calm and do it with reason. That is how you teach. Now, Cain in the Bible is the first time where we really see anger displayed in a human setting. We see other things with Adam and Eve, but Cain killed his brother. And when he killed his brother, it says God saw him. He says, why is your countenance fallen and your wrath? You have rage. You're mad. It illustrates that God's way is calm, even in the face of problems, where Satan's way is anger. So be aware of the difference. The third C is consequences. Now, our minds probably naturally run to negative things first. But there are consequences for doing the right thing, like cleaning your plate, brushing your teeth, making your bed, getting a good grade on your homework. There are positive consequences and the negative ones. Don't brush your teeth. Don't make your bed. Don't finish your food. Throw the peas on the floor. You know, they kind of roll off that way. And do lousy on your homework. There's consequences there as well. Each child will respond to different consequences. in different ways. You can't say they're always going to respond the same way. I think we all have seen that in our families. You didn't respond the same way that your brothers or sisters did when they were growing up, and so you can't expect anything different from your own children. So the effectiveness of how you work with them changes as they grow and change in age. You have to adjust to stay effective. You have to adjust to stay effective. Whenever you use a consequence, be sure you can enforce it. If you're going to say something, you have to stick to it. Agree with your wife on whatever that is, or your husband, and when you need to enforce it, then you're going to have to stand together. Now, under consequences, I want to just consider a proverb with you where it shows the potential afterwards of laughter. Sometimes there's laughter, but afterwards it's not real happy. It says in Proverbs 14:13, here it teaches things that are not always what they seem to be. It says, even in laughter, the heart may be in pain. And the end of joy may be grief. And so the consequences, sometimes you see someone that's trying to push away the difficulty that they went through in life and say, well, you know, I want to change that. But they don't quite know how to go about it, and they're laughing a lot, changing the way in which they go through things. In Proverbs 15, in that same area, verses 13 through 14, Proverbs 15:13 says, a merry heart makes a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart the spirit is broken. So if there's sorrow, the consequences being negative, sometimes the spirit shows that. 14, the heart of him that has understanding seeks knowledge. But the mouth of fools feeds on foolishness. Something that's fun today should still be fun tomorrow. Fun should not change because of time. By laughter, a person may give the impression that he is enjoying life when actually in his heart he hurts emotionally. Appearances can be very deceptive. The fourth C is more like a phrase. It is a phrase. Catch them being good. Catch them being good. Rewarding good behavior is the most effective way of shaping a child's behavior. Research suggests that having a 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative interactions with your children will lead to improved behavior and a greater compliance to parental rules. So spend a lot more time, like 5 times more time, looking for the positive things. That helps them to see what is the right thing to do. That positive affirmation, you'll find that there's fewer things to correct. And so giving rewards is much more fun for parents than enforcing consequences. Now, children do need positive affirmation, but we're often very slow to give it. I'm kind of a old curmudgeon in that way. I haven't given the best encouragement always, but I've learned somewhat of that, what I need to do. And so rather than being quick to criticize, I've tried to change that. Now, I've found that our children are doing well in life, and every time that I'm able to talk with one of them, I make a very clear statement. And it's been very true, and I'm happy to say it, that I am proud of you, that you are so successful, that you're doing well in life. you've got the wealth that you need. And I'm not talking about dollars. They have plenty of those, but their wealth they have in their families and in their spirit and their tenacity, they've got some very good qualities about them. So when I end a conversation with them on the phone, I'll say, I just want to tell you thanks for being so successful. And I love you. And I've always said I love you. But in that context, when you're talking to someone that's well above 30, it carries a different weight than you're talking to a five-year-old. And that way I can continue to parent. You know, children, no matter what age, need commendation and affirmation, just like everyone else, and probably they may even need it more. I have some ideas on how to praise that if you're a little short on some suggestions. When you catch them doing something right, praise them. They could do something very specific. I appreciate you because. Now, I appreciate you. You're great. Look what you did. And you can even say that when they follow through and do their chores. Well, you can have the old view, well, that's expected of them. Yeah, it's expected of them. But when they sweep the floor and they do a fine job, say, you did a great job sweeping that floor. Thanks. It won't hurt you to say thanks and congratulate them. You can be, I'm pleased to see you. Or thank you. You can tell your children, thank you. Now in Proverbs 25:11 through 13, it helps us frame the thought of whether or not we are encouragers or defamers. Do we step on people or do we lift them up? Proverbs 25:11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. A fitly spoken word. A praise can be so wonderful. As an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, so is a wise reprover upon an obedient ear. So when someone is obedient, that might be the time to step up the requirements sometimes. You made that goal, now let's, okay, you got a B, let's see if we can go for a B+ next time. What do we got to do to get that B+? Then it says in verse 13, as the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him. For he refreshes the soul of his masters. Harvesting, when there's a little nip in the air, it goes real fast, you can work harder. So maybe there's something for us there. Now in conclusion, these four C's that I've mentioned to you, consistency, calm, consequences, and catch them being good. You know, if you go way back to where we started, it's also four important concepts to making your marriage successful. And while we've been talking about children, in your marriage, following these four concepts, you'll find that there is an improved relationship. Now, these four keys that I've just mentioned for you, consistency, calm, consequences, and catching them being good, are used by our Father in heaven on us as his children. We who are maturing and having an opportunity to grow in the ways of God, we'll find that God is always consistent. He can be calm. He says what the consequences are. And he likes to catch us being good. And he rewards us. So while I've gone through these concepts and how they can apply in the final portion of this series with the family and taking care of children, it also takes care of your marriage and it takes care of your relationship with God. So be about your Father's business. And as you do that, you'll also be about the business of your children.